So we begin our sugya. I wanted to, the passage in the Tshuva Degonim takes, it's taken me like 4 or 5 times through it to finally get most of what they're driving at. If you got it on the first time, there are two possibilities. You're either a genius or you didn't get it. And I want to point out also that while there are two general approaches in the Gaonim, the Rishonim don't necessarily, like Rashi, neither Rashi nor Tosos, I think, adhere to either approach. Neither one of them can be said to disparage the Gaonim. Tosos is conceptually a very different, mahalach. Again, they each Rashi and Tosos, how many of you have seen Rashi? Okay, I don't expect you've gotten through Tosos, but Rashi definitely falls into one camp, and Tosos falls into one camp. So I think it's useful to see this passage from the Gaonim more in the model of general types rather than specifics. Let's go over the Gemara one more time before we read this, and let's just highlight really what is clear in the Gemara and what is not clear in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Rav Chista not Rav Chista, Itmar heviu lefneim te'enim vanavim v'socha se'uda. So we know two things about this fact. We're dealing with fruits and they brought it to tocha se'uda. Now, what is the function of bringing these fruits in the middle of the meal? Based upon what the Gemara says so far?
Based on what it said so far, we have no idea.
Exactly. This is a crucial point to remember, that there are two parts to this Gemara. Part number one is Rav Huna Nachman, Sheshes, and Rav Chiya. That's part one. Part number two is Rav Papa. When you look at the way the sugya is constructed, there's an enormous disjoint here. What is the relationship between Rav Papa's statement and the three Amoraim who came before? That issue is highlighted at the end of this passage from the Gaonim. Is this like a Tshuva Sagonim, or what is this? I don't know. Teirush.
They put it in the Birushim.
Okay. So, how do you know?
How do I know that's a Tshuva?
Yeah. As opposed to a Peirush. The Gaonim were asked questions about how to understand the Gemara.
Right. I mean, I think that's what.
Well, you want to, if you're going to call that a Tshuva, then.
They also wrote, you know, Peirushim to Prakim, but I assume, I don't know why it's this, but I assume that this was, the form was a Tshuva.
Okay, because it looks to me like a Tshuva normally would be Shishelten. That's normally its form.
Well, this is being quoted second hand.
Okay, fine. Anyway, I'm just going to call it the Gaonic passage. So that issue is dealt with at the end. At the end, after explaining two ways of explaining with Papa, right, the question they were asked, whether it's a Tshuva, a Shela, or a Peirush question, the question they were asked was how to understand Rav Papa's statement. Once the Meshiv is finished explaining the possibilities of Rav Papa's statement, now the question is, how does that relate to the first part of the sugya? How does it relate to where does Rav Huna come into play? How does Rav Sheshes come into play? How does Rav Chiya come into play? Now the truth is, when you read the Gemara, my problem for me is I've taught this sugya now multiple times. I've been sharing it outside of KJ, in KJ, and now we're getting to it here. So I've kind of reached maskanas and so on. But when you step back and look at the sugya afresh, there are really two pieces to the sugya. Now this is not if there's anything going on here, it's not a Bava Lai Tzisrael, it's an early and a late. Right? Rav Sheshes, Rav Nachman, and Rav Huna, Rav Sheshes, Rav Huna, and Rav Chiya are all relatively speaking early, right? These Amorayim are which generation?
Second Bava.
Really second, maybe second bleeding into the third. Rav Papa is which generation? You're supposed to say Rav Papa and Rav Huna Breed of Yeshua are the only two Amorayim I expect you to know there of that generation. Five. Rav Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan may shot this off and go with them, but they're actually second generation Eretz Yisrael, which they don't match up so much. Mm-hmm. Then the next generation are Rabbi Yehuda's definitely second, Rav Huna's definitely second, Rav Chista and Rav Sheshes are second, Rav Nachman kind of floats between second and third. Third generation might be Rav Nachman, Rav Yosef, Rava. Fourth generation is Abai and Rava, Rav Nachman by Yitzhak, if you want to add for good measure. Fifth generation of Rav Papa, Rav Huna Breed, Rabbi Yeshua, the Bali Kluta. Sixth generation Rav Ashi. Those are the Amoraim you should see instantly. Now, obviously, lots of other Amorim. These are probably most of the most common Amorim, and they're the ones that you should know which generation they belong to. Okay, so there's a generation. What are you making faces at?
No,
I was
responding
to
my other question.
Yes.
I just scratched
them
down. The
rabbit
refers to this as
Pirushaka.
So.
Okay, fine. Whatever. Either way. So Rav Papa seems to be a sort of a later recap, and the question is, what's the relationship between Rav Papa and those who came earlier? So what do they say? So Rav Huna and Rav Nachman say that you require a bracha rishona, and you don't require a bracha achrona. So why is it that they require a bracha rishona? In its most simplest statement, which nobody can argue on, Ronnie? Sure, you get two shots.
Either
if you're wrong on both, you get the firing squad.
Either you can't name the name, or they're not tafel.
Okay, so I could argue with you whether they're tafel or not, or how the category should apply. What if the first one? It's in the middle of a meal, the tochasuda. So the one thing you can say definitively is what? That Hamotzi doesn't cover it.
Yes.
The question now becomes why? You now filled in a reason, which is what Rashi says, because it's not Tzveva. Okay, Jay, can you say something else? Okay. So why does Bracha Achrona then cover it? That is an approach. That's an approach taken in the Rishonim. That becomes, even though it's not normally a meal food, it becomes part of the meal. I didn't mean it that way. No, that's a valid approach, you know, as defined by the Rishonim, certainly.
You can also have a valid approach at the time.
That was not the Chiddush I would have, Rani. The Chiddush is what I rejected, even though it's found in the Rishonim. So I'm willing to say that if it's found, then we've shown him it is definitionally a valid approach. I might not think it's the best approach or the best shot approach, but yes. But I certainly accept an approach that's not in the Rishonim. What it would seem to be, is it mazon or not? Is it covered by Birkat HaMazon? Okay. So this is Rav Huna and Rav Nachman. Rav Sheshes Amar Tunim Bracha Bein Lefnei Bein Lachrayim. So what is Rav Sheshes obviously assuming? It's neither covered by Hamotzi, and it's not covered by, and Birkas HaMazon doesn't cover it either. Now, the reason why Birkas HaMazon might not cover Boaz is, right, in other words, just because it came in the meal, doesn't make it part of the meal. Okay. Now, what do both of these people assume about the Bracha Rishona? The fact that you make it tells you, contrary to popular wisdom, that, Shimmy?
Bread doesn't cover everything?
That bread is not an all-purpose patherer. It's just not. It's not a bracha kolelis.
It is, they're just misunderstanding what it means for bread to be an all-purpose
patherer.
Mm, right? It is putter everything in the suda.
But why is it putter that? What? Under what category? If it's not lechem, under what category that we know so far would you say it pathers everything, conceptually? Yeah. What? Yeah, you are correct. That's how we. But why should Hamotzi pater that? It's tafa.
Yeah.
Because remember, how do they eat their meals? What was their meals typically?
Bread.
Why is bread the word used in Tanakh for food?
Because
that was the staple of the meal. Right. It says, "V'lo yada yitoma uma kiyam alecha mashavu achel." So the only thing that Potiphar paid attention to was the bread. But the hummus, he didn't pay no attention to. That doesn't call it no sixth sense. No, because bread means food. Yes, Rani.
In the following Mishnah, where it identifies what bread is poted, it says it's only about poted, which is like dip. At least the way the Rambam says it's the time, which it makes sense, right? It's only poted, that which is connected to bread.
Yes. The real thorny food. What's the thorniest food in the passage in the Gaonim, for those who have an opinion about it? I don't mean the one that they discuss which is the hardest one to swallow, no pun intended, right? Very good. Very good. It's the dayasa. Dayasa in the second approach. Dayasa. But Rani, yes, they are adopting a lift. The question is, what is lift pun?
I thought it just spoke almost.
So the question is, what if you're having bread and you're having pickle with it, or you're having herring with it?
So Rashi extended to even fish and parkiyot.
To say that it's nuts.
No, he defines parkiyot as those things.
Well, okay, yes, but not... Yes, well, that's a problem for multiple reasons. But the start is that it would contradict Rashi here, unless Rashi rejects the Papa. Okay, hold off on that anyway. So what you see, though, that Birchas HaMotzi is opposed to Shehakol Ezra. Birchas HaMotzi is not a Bracha Hakol Elas. Not in the way we think of Shehakol. Right? Shehakol patters things, and if HaAdama patters HaEitz, in standard, without our radical Chiddush in the previous subject, if Shehakol patters foods, and HaAdama patters, however it patters, it's not because of Iker HaTafel, it's because the Bracha is Kol Elas. It includes these other things. Birchas HaMotzi Lechem and Haaretz is not kolelas, the things that are asim af masuda. What it does is, it says since lechem is the ikar of the suda, everything else that comes along with the lechem, liftan, is niftar with the bracha of HaMotzi, because it's essentially tafel. Not the tafel that we've been thinking about, right? It's not the tafel of a taroves, it's not the tafel of a sandwich, it's the tafel of ayin A, ayin B, but A is the ikar, and B, I'm eating along with it. Okay, so, but both of them agree, it's not a bracha klavales. Now the Gemara says, upliga de Rabbi Chia. The Amar Rabbi Chia pas poteres kol mine macho, v'yayin poter kol mine macho. Rabbi Chia claimed, Rabbi Chia was very modern, and he claimed that bread is the all-purpose potter. It's not a bracha kolelas, but it is a bracha kolelas. Bread is king of the foods. Once you made a bracha on the bread, it doesn't matter whether it's tafel to the bread or not. You don't need to make any of the bracha. And what one could have said, by the way, one could have said, although it wouldn't cover shahatel stuff, hamotzi lechem in aretz, he brings food out of the ground. You could have seen it. Now, you can't say that by dvar kriya gafa then.
Might be pshat on pasuk.
Yes, it might be pshat. That is correct. Probably the pasuk. But it's not how Chazal are taking the pasuk when they use that bracha. But you can't say that respect to Geffen. You can't say that all fluids are wine. Geffen, you know, pri ha-gafen is not a synonym for all beverages that you drink. So when he says that the wine, avoy pri ha-gafen, patters all other mashkim, that is because wine is king of all other wine is king of all the mashkim. You might say, by the way, it is an ikar v'tafel, meaning that when you eat bread, nothing else counts. It's like, but it clearly is going beyond. Both Rav Sheshes and Rav Nachman Rav Huna would agree that there are foods that are niftar b'toch hasuda. Probably, I don't know about Rashi. But certainly, once you get the Tosis, there are foods that are niftar b'toch hasuda because they're meal foods. And that is one kind of ikar v'tafel. Whereas Rav Chiya's pas poter kol mine macho, I don't want to say it is an ikar v'tafel, it's king of the brachos. It's king of the brachos. But the reason why it's king of the brachos is because bread is the primary food. It's not exactly, it's different. Otherwise, the other Amorim, if it's just an ikar v'tafel, then the other Amorim presumably should agree it also. So it's a different kind of ikar v'tafel, sure. The other
it kind of feels like ikar v'tafel has its own rules when it comes to Suda.
Well, I don't really say its own rules, it's just that they're different kinds of ikar v'tafels.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the same thing. Ronnie?
How does the BPI have the right to make statements both about bread and wine, when the next Mishnah limits bread to just partake it, and wine to just wine after it?
Anybody want to answer that question? There's a very strange comment in Rabbeinu Yonah that the Mefarish wonders what he's talking about, Jimmy.
I mean, you could say that Mishnah is giving you an example.
No, simple answer.
Ruchia was just early enough that he could do that.
Ruchia was a Tana. The Gemara says, he's Rebbe's student, but you look at the word Rebbe talks about him, Gedol Namas Ruchia, the Gemara says in a few places, Ruchia Tana Hupali. The Daf Yomi just had it. I'm now a few days ahead, not 20 days behind. So I have to remember, it's in the sugya in Bava Metzia. For those who are here next year, we will God willing learn it. The sugya of Halach. The sugya of Halach. So the Gemara suggests that there's a Tannaitic source that Halach is pata by Moda b'miktas, and Rav Chiya says Halach is chayav. I'm speaking gibberish. You know Moda b'miktas is running? If you ask me $100, I say, oh, you nothing. Midaraisa, I don't do anything. If I say, are you 50? Midaraisa, I have to take a shuas mode that makes less than the other 50. What if I say, yes, are you 50? Here it is. And I still owe you 50. It's called Halach. I've already given it to you. So now the outstanding debt that you're being tovea really is zero. She says, Halach is still have to take a shuas mode that makes less. And Roshashis, if somebody says there's no mode that makes less by Halach, and I think the Gemara to defend Rabbi Yechiyah after quoting a Braisa, says, Rabbi Yechiyah Tana Hupali. So Rabbeinu Yonah asked the question in our sugya. He says, how could the Amoraim argue Rabbi Chiya? And it's not clear what his answer is, but the Mefarish comments, Rabbi Chiya's a Tana means he has the right to argue on Braisas. He's not a Tana in terms of Amoraim, not arguing him. There's a Tzvei Dinim in the Tana. One with the authority to argue, one with the authority to not be argued upon. So we don't assume Amoraim, or Rabbi Chiya can be part of a Machlokas Amoraim, Rabbi Chiya Rabosha, Rabbi Chiya, and you'll find Machlokas Rabbi Chiya and other Amoraim.
Do Rav, for example, get that power?
What, who? Rav is the only one I'm aware of. Rav, the Gemara says, number place, is Rav Tana Ho Pali.
Is Rav later than Rukia?
Yes, he's his nephew.
Oh, yeah.
So, theoretically, Rukia took the position of a Mishnah and Amora argued on
him. That wouldn't work, because you could just cross Rukia in a picture.
Right.
You ask me, how could Rukia argue on the Mishnah? Good question. The answer is, I don't see the Rishonim talking about Rechiya very much, actually. There was no discussion of the Shiva. I don't know why. What's that? Nice talk. Okay, so they both argue on Rechiya, because Rechiya says that Pas is king of the Brachos, Yayin is queen of the Mashal. So now, Amar Rav Papa. Now, firstly, how are Rav Papa's words introduced? Amar Rav Papa. Not Rav Papa, Amar.
And it's also not their Amar.
Okay, that I wouldn't expect, because he's not qualifying what they... It doesn't look like he's qualifying.
It's like
what's that? Qualifies the
Machloket.
What do you mean qualifies?
It's like, and the deed is, after all...
Right, Republicans are commenting on all of them at once and saying, this is all these things together, and this is how we kind of...
Right, but then the question is, since there are three different opinions, whose opinion is Republic adopting?
He does bring in the new concept of Halakha Sunnah.
What's that?
Well,
is it a new concept, or is it a formulation? So let's talk first. Can I ask you a question? What foods have we been talking about until now?
Fruits.
And how are these fruits being eaten? Probably. What? Is it fruit jam spread on bread?
No.
Is it a fruit standalone?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not malafis hapas, is the simple reason. Yeah. So the Amoraim are arguing when you have something that's not malafis hapas. And how would you classify fruits in terms of relationship to a suda?
They're like not dessert.
They're not part of the suda. You wouldn't say they're part of the suda. They might be dessert, but they're not part of the suda.
But they're not
the let me ask you a question, Rani. We're going to make a chakira now. Oh. Supposing somebody goes and brings you out a delicious slice of butterflake cake. You know, it's like the soft, birthday cake. Boaz, is your mouth watering? Hey, listen. You're what's that? Yes. So, it's a bakery.
It's really healthy.
It's really good.
It's really healthy.
Yes. Okay. Fine. So now, Ronnie, someone brings you out. You know, they're serving the children and the kugel, and someone brings you out a slice of that cake, and you eat it. Is that dessert?
No.
Well. It is dessert. Well, no. You see, you're getting caught up between the two lishonos of the Gaon. Exactly. Exactly what he said is the heart of the dispute in the Gaon. You wish to impugn my run?
I wish to impugn. He got it first try.
What? Some of you guys looked at the Tshuva Sagonim, or you saw the Pir Sagonim, excuse me?
Yeah.
Yes? If you had to, in a nutshell, classify the two Lashonos, Jake, what would you say? How did they differentiate? In like a sentence or a half or less?
Nachmasasuda as actually Nachmasasuda, or Nachmasasuda as things that are usually Nachmasasuda.
Is it particular or general?
Okay. yes, what goes along with that is this typological or chronological? Are we defining what the food is, or are we talking about how it was used? Now, it's very hard, I will tell you, by the way, it's very hard to read this Perush HaGaonim if you've already read Rashi and especially Tosfos. Most of the Rishonim fall in line with the Gaonim in one way, which is they assume that Rapapa is talking about what kind of food? Fruits. In all three, he's talking about fruits.
It could be anything.
What?
No.
It's not going to be anything for them. Leaving aside Dayasa and the Gaonim, for most of them, what?
I know.
And Tosfos certainly doesn't take away neither Rashi.
Right.
But in the Gaonic presentation, it's all about fruit.
But Haggadah mentions fish.
In the first lashon, I take that back. In the first lashon, it's all about fruits. Right? Fruits that came b'toch ha'suda mecham ha'suda. Fruits that came b'toch ha'suda shol mecham ha'suda. Fruits that came after the suda.
That's just a tool to show that the same foods can be eaten in different situations as opposed to that.
Yeah, that's how I read it too.
Yes, but Jake, it means that a fruit can be dual use.
Yeah.
I understand that. But fish is not dual use. Right? Tosfos' whole idea, Tosfos is almost unique in the Mishonim, that he defines a period la'achara su'uda, and then he claims that everything brought in it, you make brachas before and after. According to Tosfos, I don't know what he would say if you made bread, got bread in it, la'achara su'uda. But certainly cake, as you would say, they may be exceptions because of pasta b'kisla. But certainly for Tosfos, if you brought fish after the su'uda, shako v'ore nefashos. If you brought cheese, ditto. If you brought tayasa, for sure you're making a mezonos. Okay, but I'm more interested in lachar suda. For other Rishonim, there may not be such a thing as a lot. Many of them quote Tosfos, but in reality, there really isn't such a thing when it comes to other foods as lachar suda. In other words, if you're looking, Jay, either to define a food categorically, or, excuse me, if you're looking to define how you use this food because it has multiple uses and it depends when you use it, it makes no sense talking about fish or cheese or dayasa. Because that is always what it is. It doesn't matter when you eat it, it always has the same function and it's normally used for that function. Only for Tosfos, who takes the gaonic position to an extreme, or the first lashon, that there's la'achara suda, which is purely a chronological period. It's not typological at all. Anything you eat, la'achara suda, in principle, requires a bracha mishon achrona. It might be pasta b'kishtin doesn't require bracha achrona, and pasta doesn't require bracha achrona. I don't know, they never discussed it. What would happen if you had la'achara suda? You're at a wedding, and now they call it the Viennese table. And you decide, I want some more, they serve delicious bread, I'm going to have some more of that.
Also, with this statement, apply mashlim as well. Is that fair? If we assume far end, it's like just not.
So that's going to be the next discussion that we've shown him. How do you handle mashlim b'toch ha'suda? What? Either way. What's that?
Is la'achara suda consistent across mashlim and
for Tosfos, probably yes. In other words, you would treat mashkin like you would treat fish, for Tosfos. Okay. So, but I would say that the two Lashonos and the Gaonim break down One is focused. I think, Jake, how did you say it? I both of what we said is correct, but how did you say it?
Is Mahasuda foods that are currently used in Mahasuda, or is it foods that are usually used in Mahasuda? Is it how they're usually used, or how they're being used?
Okay, so that is better, the last formulation. In other words, how is it used here versus how is it generally used? Its current function versus its typical function. Okay. So now Rav Papa in our Girsa has three categories. Dvarim habayim mechamasa suda betocha suda. So it seems to be two different criteria here. One is time, and one is purpose.
What do you mean by time?
It's coming now, betel chasuda.
Oh, okay.
Its purpose is mechamas suda, whatever that means, and it is coming during the suda. Now that's what it sounds like. That is not the way the second interpretation of the Gaon is going to be. In other words, well, it may be. The second one is Shalom Mechamas Hasuda, but Betoch Hasuda. So it's the same tithing, and it's the same food, but it has a different function. It's not Mechamas Hasuda. And the third category, the way we have the Girsa, which is Tosis's Girsa, is La'achar Hasuda. Now, there is a structural ambiguity in this Brisa, which is at the root of the Machlokas Tosis, and let's say the Rashba, I think, may have the Shita. I forget who else has the Shita. What is the structural ambiguity? Shimmy?
Is the Achar Suda only according to Lo Mitzvah or not?
I'm not sure I understood it, right?
Is Lachar referring back to Machas or Justitution?
Right. Is it going on the entire first two clauses or only on the last clause? Correct. And but in his statement, in other words, do you read it as A and then B1 and B2? Or do you read it as A and B and then C goes back and modifies both? In other words, the first clause in Rav Papa's statement is Dvarim Habayim Mechamas HaSuda B'toch HaSuda, then Dvarim Habayim Shalom Mechamas HaSuda B'toch HaSuda, and then La'achar HaSuda. So is La'achar HaSuda going only on the last one? Which, in other words, Dvarim Habayim B'toch HaSuda Mechamas HaSuda are no brachas. Dvarim Habayim B'toch HaSuda Shalom Mechamas HaSuda Bracha Rishona. And then Dvarim Habayim require both bracha before and after. But if it's dvarim habayim mechamas suda, even la'achar suda might not require brachas. And there are shitas and rishonim who say that.
What does that even mean? It's after. So how could it be mechamas?
Well, that's exactly the point. Is that if you choose to eat it afterwards, it means it's not after. That would be the hezbollah. Because in the infamous, in the famous words of Yogi Berra. You know Yogi Berra was? He was a catcher for the New York Yankees. Yogi Berra, yes, Patriot, I know. He had a lot of malpropisms, but he was a good ball player and a nice guy. Yogi Berra once said, "Ain't over till it's over," which actually has come to mean something. Actually, it colloquially, it means something. It means until it's actually over, never say never. So, but in this case, Lonnie, so I'll say it ain't over till it's over.
Okay, so say it up. Let's say that again.
So,
not that.
Dvarim haba mechamas hasuda b'toch hasuda requires bracha rishon. No bracha. Dvarim haba shalom mechamas hasuda b'toch hasuda requires a bracha rishon. And then dvarim, and this is what's not stated, haba shalom mechamas hasuda la'achar hasuda requires bracha rishon la'achar. So, but what about the case that's not spoken about? Dvarim haba mechamas asuda lachar asuda. Well, the answer is, if it's dvarim mechamas asuda, it's not lachar asuda definitionally.
That's where they get their crazy.
No.
Why?
Tosus is getting there, that shita, which most of the Rishonim follow, by claiming we just don't have a lachar asuda period today.
Yeah, our meals are treat everything as mechamas. So
no, because they say that we're not misalik yadein menapas until we bench. In other words, if bread is the, listen, if you leave, you know, I don't know, maybe people are afraid. We usually leave the challah board on the table. If we don't remove the challah board, we cut all the challah, we put it in a basket, and we leave it on the table. And people will continue to eat challah up until they bench. That's Tosfos' argument. So it's always considered betoch hasudah. Not because, not, it's not circular reasoning. It's
no
say, what?
No one's eating bread.
Sorry,
some people are eating bread. There you go. Thank you
very much. Some people are eating bread. If you're still hungry, you might nibble, and it's really good challah. It's just awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to eat more dessert because,
you know,
the
problem. Fine. I was eating Shabbos lunch, and we had egg challah, and we got to dessert, and I said,
"Pepper's
dessert," and then there was no dessert, so I had some egg
challah. There you go. That's
personal.
Wow. It's hard too when you hear that fellow.
It uproots the word, the meaning of the word lechem chasa. It means after. You can't decide that even though something is.
So, Rodney, let me formulate ahead. What do you want to say?
It's weird that it's interesting that he's using chas as but the action of eating bread as literally the soup. As opposed to thinking of the suda as a meal, a whole meal, you have bread, which is kobeya suda, but you also have soup and meat and whatever.
Right.
And after that whole thing with a bunch of different, you have dessert. And you may be still eating bread, but because you're eating bread, that is soup with their stuff.
Well, that's because that was their reality. Again, they had stuff with bread today.
Yeah, because you're still eating bread, it's still considered suuda. Correct. Even though you're not eating all the other stuff, which we normally say is suuda.
Correct. Because we eat differently. In other words, in the times of Tosfos, you go to a Shabbos meal, how much challah do you typically have? If there's food, if you eat the kinds of food
you
have.
At home or at someone else's.
Well, it depends whether you eat the food, whether you like the food. So your mother probably prepares the kind of food that you eat.
Sure.
Mentally, so therefore you eat it. How much challah do you eat? Okay, many people who are worried about preserving their shape, growing upwards, not growing outwards. So what? So, the question is that you're allowed to share someone's not funny joke with you. I don't know if it's funny or not, but okay, we don't have a rule for that. But the point is that today it's pretty common that people will have a piece of challah. You should have at least a kazayis, but everybody's careful about that. Have a kazayis. And then people fill themselves with everything else. Why waste it on challah? So, but yes, historically speaking, that was the main component. You had stuff with bread. That's why we've come up with this whole idea of lalachos is a pas.
You have stuff with bread.
With that, whether mamish on it or not even on it.
This is a new fakir, right?
That is
it. A meal, or is it a bread eating thing?
So what about the Tzemach Tzemorayim? What does the suda look like?
Bread. That's what it looks like.
How's Tosfos going to say? What does Tosfos say about the other line? Right? Did they have a hasuda? And if so, how?
Okay, so Tosfos will. You read Tosfos. It will say that they were revealing the Salaites Hashulchan. And then they might have brought out desserts. So the bread was, nobody ate bread anymore.
Nobody ate bread.
Correct. And therefore, that's called lach arasuda. So if they bring you dessert at that point, then you make a bracha rishon and achrona. But Tosfos says, we are not regiling the salat of yodenim and a pas until we did. That's right.
The Chacham already is complaining about the Ashurim, of all sorts of delicacies that eat like an emblem and a half of bread and then...
Correct, they don't eat out of kazayas.
Yeah.
Yes. But that, again... Bread, if you think about even how, what is the expression during the Great Depression? What were the lines that there were for people to get food? They're called?
Bread lines.
Right. If you go, what food, I don't know if it still is, what is probably the most heavily subsidized food in Israel by the government?
Bread.
Why? Because bread for most cultures. What did he say? Hummus is relatively inexpensive compared to a lot of foods in Israel. I know it's the Western. But nonetheless, so the Rabosai, the point is that bread is most cultures, right? If you're a government, especially, it doesn't matter whether you're a dictator or you're a government, you worry most about the price of bread, right? You subsidize that. You know, today it's also gasoline. It's the second, you know, major subsidized, not in this country, but I mean, it may be subsidized with tax breaks to corporations, but it's not actually subsidized directly. What? Inelastic. Okay. Oh. I understood. He's got to show that he learned something in the.
I didn't learn that.
Oh, so you've learned nothing. Excellent. Okay.
He will take an economics course.
Okay. Let's go. So anyway, so those are going to be. So that anyway. So that question remains. But I think Tosos is totally almost agnostic to fruits being different than anything else. It's really, for Tosos, really takes it to a screen. It's just how they are used. Now, how they are generally used may give you colored lenses in terms of looking at what's being really happening now. But fundamentally speaking, it's its function. Tosos goes to the extreme that it is its function now. In that sense, Ronnie, Tosos might... The position that I presented to you before is not Tosos. La'akhar Suda going only on clause B, not clause A, is not Tosos. Tosos says, he doesn't talk about it explicitly, but whatever you have La'akhar Suda, whether it's Mechamasa Suda or not, you have to make a bracha Rishon and Achrona. So I could imagine Tosos would say, if you brought out bread, you certainly have to wash the Tiyas Udayim. I don't think that you bench twice. You know, I think Pasim Abakistan falls in the same category. Because Pasim Abakistan is Pas. If they brought it out La'akhar Suda, that's the one thing that you have to make a bracha Rishon. You don't make a bracha Achrona. Why? Because it's Pas. Therefore, you're not going to make two brachas Abasos.
And I guess, also, that there's an underlying assumption that you wouldn't have bread. In other words, of course...
You normally would not have bread. That is correct.
In other words, of course you wouldn't eat the Kasabazon twice. If you're not making it for Kasabazon Kisanis, of course you wouldn't...
Kavachom you're not making for Kasabazon bread. Right. No, listen, it is almost certainly unheard of that somebody's going to have a Viennese table and they're going to bring out pita and hummus.
What's a Viennese?
A Viennese table. I imagine. I don't know if they still do it as a table. At least at our son's wedding, it was just I guess it was a. It is a table off to the side, but I think it used to be something that would roll in and had all the fancy desserts on it. And probably my guess is that it got that name because it was what high society did in Vienna. So in the 19th or early 20th century, that's my guess of how the term came to be. So nobody, Louis, is something colored off. Okay. Yes, fine. I think it's only secondary to, in other words, it might inform how you interpret what's in front of you. Right? But Tosos most certainly would say that when you are, if you are using fruit. If you somehow use fruit in the same way, I think, as you would use potatoes, as you would use fish, I think for Tosfos, I think that would take on the characteristics of that Dabar Haba Mechamasa Suda.
He discusses the regular in that one, but he's not discussing non-standard usages. Are you discussing standard usages?
I don't know. Let me think about that. Some. Let me think about
that. Somebody would bring in there the only non-standard usages.
But again, I'll go over that. I think that Tosos is in the mold of the first. Tosos clearly is taken about chronology, not global, normal usage, but because Tosos sees La'achar Suda and Tilchas Suda differently. It makes no sense. The second position, the Gaonim. And I think it's explicitly stated that there are two axes. One is Dvarim Shadarka Lavo, and one is how they're being used now, and one is Tochasuda, one is Regilim Betochasuda. Tosos has opted for option A. The fact that he has La'achar Suda set apart, which is not dependent at all upon the type of food. So I tend to think of Tosos as Mechamas, Shalom Mechamas, as how it's being used here. But maybe you have to modify that. Shimi.
Alright, so first of all, you talked about the possibility that La'achar Suda is specific to Dakma Lo Mahmad, but in that case, and that it, otherwise I didn't know if that's over, but in that case, why does it say Dvarim
So that would only be to set up the second one. That's the only reason, right? Because first it should, if you said again, if you say dvaran habayim betoch hasuda, don't require bracha l'chara. Now you just contradict clause B. Dvaran habayim mechamas hasuda. So it might be definitional, and therefore, listen. I'm not telling. Tosus doesn't read that way, but it may be because going back to Rami's point, that's the normal time you're doing dvaran habayim mechamas hasuda. By some chance, if you brought a lachar suda, it might not be lachar suda anymore. Right? It might have the same din as the first part. Yes, Ron.
So in terms of how you read Be'achana Suda as B2 or C, so the Ron says it's Be'achana Suda, Ben Mehamat Suda, Ben Shiro.
So that's the way Tosfos reads it. Yeah. Okay. So Sunday we will resume B'kiyas, and Monday we will read the passage in the Gaonim. You should be, by the way, if you want to know what to be doing, the answer is do everything. And if you're being on friendly terms, I'm trying to do the Ra'ah at the end as well. But be prepared to come in a Monday and Tuesday. I would like to go through all the sheet notes. I don't want to. We've spoken about the Sugya Halacha. We've looked at the Gemara. We will look at most of the Rishon, maybe not all of it inside. So be prepared to a Monday and Tuesday to kind of, pull this stuff together. There is.